Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 209. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Casey Zeman. Welcome, Casey.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Casey, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Yes, I think I am. I can see that I have way more things that I want to do, but for the most part, I am doing and using the talents to kind of carve the life that I want.
Excellent. We want to hear the whole story. Speaking of story, Casey Zeman is the best-selling author of Build Your Audience with Live Video, the founder of the webinar platform Easy Webinar, and the new Periscope analytic and marketing software Fullscope.tv. With over 6,000 plus Easy Webinar customers and thousands of Fullscope users, Casey has figured out what works and what doesn't in the way of webinars, live broadcast, video, and what truly makes an engaged audience. He's also consulted such companies as HarperCollins, Estee Lauder, and Dell on video marketing strategies and lead nurture funnels about webinars. Casey, that's a pithy summary of your career to date. Tell us what you're up to now that has you engaged and excited.
Yeah, well, thanks for the intro. So, you know, the things that really excite me, I think, to sum them up are the top engagement strategies for kind of building your own community and a business that you love, that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love video. I love live video. So I started diving into webinars, and then now I'm really excited about the aspect of live streaming from your phone. So I love live video and video for building an engaged audience, building a know, like, and trust, virtual handshake. That's something I started off using a while back, and it was in line with what my goals and passions were when I was a kid. I mean, that's kind of why I love video today. So video is one of my favorite things, and live video.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, as we talked about earlier, everyone's life is a series of turning points, some call them passages, where we face obstacles and issues and choices and victories, and then decide on our strategy and move forward. Take us back as far as you will, Casey, in your life's journey to the turning points that are most memorable to you that make Casey Zeman, Casey Zeman.
Yeah, well, I guess it's both environment and
nature, nature and nurture.
Nature and nature. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a twin brother. I guess I'm defined a lot by my family. When I was a kid, my parents were both very, very supportive of anything that my brother and I would do. So my brother and I, actually, we were both entertainers, actors. We went to school for theater and music. And, you know, these turning points throughout my life, I guess, have been these moments when my parents gave support and I was actually able to kind of follow a kind of a vision or a dream.
Tell us about the entertainer-actor thing early on. Was that nurtured by your parents?
Yeah. You know, my brother and I, we would always, like, some of the first plays we did were, was in kindergarten. We were doing, like, The King's New Clothes, right? Mm-hmm. I can't remember that play where the king is naked. It's like, yes, we had those. We were just doing plays very early on. And my mom is a social worker. My dad is a lawyer. And they were never into entertainment or never into being, you know, acting and singing, or they never openly talked about being creative. Oh. And to this day, when I ask my mom, if you could do anything, what would that be? And she really wouldn't know, because oftentimes if I ask her what her passion is, she said, you know, I don't have a passion.
Oh.
It's so interesting. So, and I think it's just due to when she grew up and some of her own circumstances as she was growing up. But for us, they were very supportive of anything we wanted to do. So
that was wonderful. That's really lucky.
So we went into acting in high school. We did a lot of plays, and we did create a fine arts camp and stuff like that. And I actually started doing more singing. Then my brother and I both ended up going to the same school in Michigan, Western Michigan University. And I went for opera, and my brother went for theater. And that was kind of the start of it. So there are definitely turning points where all these things define, I guess, who I am. I've never really liked working for anyone else. I think that I've taken a lot of jobs throughout my life, but some of the biggest elements of that I've kind of, and realizations that I've had, was I really didn't like being a broke actor. I think back in 2004, I was here in LA, I was acting, and I was working in a restaurant, and I realized that I kind of done with being a starving artist. Mm-hmm. You know, the starving artist thing started to weigh down on me a bit. So
let me back up here. When you were at Western Michigan University and you were studying opera, which I think is utterly fascinating, what was your vision then about where you were headed? I mean, did you really want to just be a high-level performer doing opera?
So I started doing in that program, and I realized that at that time that I didn't know if opera was truly the way I wanted to go, considering that it's probably one of the most diligent things that you ever have to do. Like when I was 18, 19, 20, I don't think I had that much discipline. I didn't have enough discipline, and I hated being told what to do. So, you know, as someone who has to, you know, you have to sing it the same exact way, you have to do it. And you had to train a considerable amount. And me, I was mostly going at least 90% talent. The rest, you know, was just me working and trying to keep up technically with everyone else, where other people were maybe 70% or 60% talent, but they had the technical chops to really kick it into gear.
What are the technical chops of opera? I'm just curious.
Well, part of it is practice. You have to stay consistent with practice. And, you know, I've learned this now in my life to keep consistency up and to, you know, I'm very healthy and active, just like you, Don. So I like to, you know, nowadays I work out often and don't mind hard work and I don't mind being uncomfortable. When I was 18, 19, 20, you know, I didn't like the discipline. I wanted to have some freedom. So I would do opera, but, you know, at karaoke nights or, you know, afterwards, I'd go sing rock or do, you know, some other stuff. So I could sense that although I had a passion, I loved opera, it didn't fit what I was at that time.
Okay.
And at that time, unfortunately, I was someone who wanted a little more freedom. So I actually jumped into music theater, actually. So I took this kind of turn to music theater because A, I didn't have to work so hard. And, you know, okay, that's exactly what I did. And, you know, I rested on my talents to be able to really kick it in and do music theater really well because of the fact that, first off, I was an actor too. And a lot of opera singers aren't necessarily actors. And that was another thing that I had an issue with, that there wasn't a lot of, I guess, acting chops that you were bringing to the table when you're doing opera. You're just kind of standing there and doing your thing. And that was my vision of it at the time. So I went into acting, went into music theater, and I really liked it because I could finally do both mediums that I really had a passion for.
Yes.
So that was one turning point where I had the flexibility and freedom to do that. I went then from there, moved to Chicago after school and went and did theater at Chicago Shakespeare and Chicago Light Opera and a few other places.
Now, these are formal education programs?
No, my program was a formal education program, but then I went into doing professional theater in Chicago after I graduated.
Okay, good. How was that? Was that fun?
Yes, that was fun. Yeah. It was a great experience because you start doing a lot of cool things with a lot of professionals that have been around for quite some time. So, you know, it was kind of like I was thrown into it, but at the same time, it was a lot of fun. It was challenging, but it was great. I mean, being an actor in Chicago when you're in your early 20s feels like you're really following your dreams and your goals.
What was your favorite role?
Well, I did a play. It's Stephen Sondheim's show, Pacific Overtures, at the Chicago Shakespeare, and I was Swing, so I played a lot of different roles, but one of the roles was the young boy, and I had to sing this solo where I was on a ladder, and if you know Sondheim, it's a great, I absolutely love Sondheim music, and at that time, I was a huge, huge fan of Sondheim, even more than I am now, and so I kind of listened to that song, you know, growing up or going to college. I remember hearing all the music from these shows and then finally being able to sing them professionally was really quite something.
Wow.
And so that was really exciting. And, you know, then I went into theater at that point, movies. I actually started to book some roles in some movies.
What year was this?
This was 2001, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 2001 in Chicago when I started booking some stuff. So I was doing movies, I was doing commercials, I was doing musicals and plays, and it was exciting. But I still sometimes had to supplement my income and things like that. And there were moments where the acting wasn't, you know, you still had to hustle. You still had to get up and do the auditions. It's a very competitive and sometimes oftentimes very, you have to really grow a thick skin when you're an actor. So mm-hmm. those were defining moments for me to be able to grow a thick skin, but also to say I never really liked working for other people. I worked at restaurants, but you know, I really made sure that I'm the one in control of my own destiny in life. So eventually I moved to New York and I did stuff there. And then I moved to LA, where I met my now wife, and we were working at a restaurant together.
Was she in the same field? Was she in performing arts?
Yeah, she was a hostess and I was a waiter at a restaurant in West Hollywood. And then, you know, we were both were here. She's from Iowa. I'm from Michigan. We both came out here for acting. We didn't know each other until we worked at this restaurant. But when we started dating, I realized that I was kind of done with being kind of a broke actor. Because even actors who get roles every so often, they're still only held, oh, I have to wait for this role or what's coming next. You know, they're always wondering what the next role is going to be. So even a professional actor, a working actor who can do pretty decent is still having those concerns and worries and thinking about those elements, right?
Yeah. They're always thinking about, well, difficult. Yeah. It'd be very difficult.
It is difficult. It's like the definition of a, you know, a freelance person and mm-hmm. where's the next job coming from? So I really didn't like that the uncertainty of all that. So I went into real estate, actually. I went in and got like a mortgage broker license so that I could start doing mortgages. And so I did it for probably 5 years, 6 years maybe. And it was with a friend of mine, and we had our own company. So I was still able to do acting and things like that, but I was actually now making money. I bought a house. So I think turning points for me were when I decided that I didn't want to continue being a broke actor and I wanted to try to do something else. That was a turning point. Another turning point was marrying my wife mm-hmm. and I think buying my house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are moments where you're like, okay, I'm growing up. And yes. You don't realize it when you're going through it. You know, you're like, okay, but when you look back, you're like, okay, well, I bought my house at 31. I have a pretty decent career going. But then when the recession hit, everything fell apart at that mm-hmm. point.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost went into foreclosure twice on my house.
Oh.
I lost my job. I went from making, you know, $250,000 a year to $15,000 the next year.
Oh,
so I had to figure something else out. And that's when I started looking online because I thought maybe I could figure out how to build leads online and maybe I'll become a financial advisor. And at this point, acting was so, you know, I was like, well, maybe if I get a commercial, but, you know, I couldn't rely on it. You know, I was in debt, so I had to figure something out. But eventually I started understanding how to build leads online using online marketing. I just started doing research on it and I understood the concept of after a while of, you know, creating a free offer and mm-hmm. building your list mm-hmm. and building your community. And one of the best pieces of advice, and this was another turning point that I was given, was choose one thing online that you want to focus on and become a master at that.
Who was the inspiration for that? Was there a book or did you poke around on Google and search it? Or how did you decide to do leads online and understand the whole marketing funnel thing, which is what you're describing?
Well, I had a friend of mine who was actually in the online marketing space and his name is Chris Farrell. And I knew him before I became a marketer, but I didn't know what he was doing. And then one day my wife was like, I think Chris is kind of looking to doing some of the things you're looking to do. I know he taught himself HTML and all this stuff, so we should have lunch. And I was like, I'm sure he's not trying to do exactly what I'm trying to do. But, you know, then we all went for lunch, he and his wife and me and Diana. We all sat and talked and I realized that he had a membership site and that he had thousands of people inside a membership platform paying him $37 a month, which
yes.
to me was like, well, that's incredible. That's
sure it is.
Recurring income. And it's all digital. It's all online. And my concept of what I wanted to do at that point changed because I was only looking to build leads online because I wanted to feed leads into, you know, what I thought I wanted to maybe do with real estate or financial advising. But then when I saw this opportunity, I talked to him a bit more and he was like, you should create some sort of online course, but become a master at one thing. That's my piece of advice. Choose one thing
mm-hmm.
because I was trying to determine what my niche was going to be online, right? So Chris gave me that bit of advice, but I think he learned it or, you know, saw it in One. Isn't there a book called One?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So the one thing that I jumped into was YouTube back in 2010, 2011, when I was coming online. YouTube was that one thing because it also led me back to my passion, which was video, which was being able to be in front of the camera, to use a medium that I was used to or that I loved or that was familiar to me, right? So I jumped in and started learning and everything about YouTube and building leads with YouTube, and I had some success. But then I was able to then land clients and then do video marketing for them, which mm-hmm. led to bigger clients such as Estee Lauder and Dell. And that was my first experience, but I still did not have an online course at that time. So while I was doing all that, I was building an online course because I was learning about how to build, you know, an online awesome course that I could create. And so my first course was called YouTube Revealed, and it was a huge, huge course, massive course with a massive ebook attached that was 225 pages long. And
wow,
it was unnecessary. It took me much longer to make money online because I spent, you know, at least 6 months building a book that really no one read anyway because it was too long.
All right.
So that was my first experience. But as soon as I created my course, another turning point hit where I saw somebody else come on the market with a product similar to mine. And I had a hesitation. I stopped myself from promoting my product because somebody else came into the market. And that was another realization that I had, that looking back, understanding, you know, only 6 months later, that even though somebody else comes on the market with a product similar to yours, it's nothing to turn away from. It just means it's a warm market. So,
well, and the market is so vast and endless because of the scope and scale of the internet, there could be many, many, many competitors in the same niche, right?
Exactly. And many competitors work together. And that's the difference between what kind of traditional business and online, the online world is kind of a little different. A lot of competitors, they kind of tend to work together, or they know when launch windows are. So they kind of understand that they're going to wait for their launch window after this. So it's a very interesting world. But at the time I was like, well, now I have to scrap my 200 videos that I already created.
Really? 200?
Yeah. But I didn't do that. I didn't actually scrap them. It was my own, you know, fears and concerns, but I consulted a couple people and they were like, Casey, this is a great product. Just put it out there. So my first year of actually creating my course, I started selling my product on webinars. And this was my first experience with a webinar, essentially, which is live. And, you know, it's definitely not an acting thing, but it is telling a story. And I had to figure out how to do a presentation. And that's what I ended up starting to focus on, was creating a presentation.
Wow.
And so I learned how to do that. And within my first year of using webinars and finding joint venture partners that would promote my webinars, I was back to about $250,000 that first year of using webinars to kind of promote my product. And what I did to have a difference in the marketplace is I, instead of selling my product for $97 or $197, which I had started to do initially, I bumped it up to $1,000, and it became more of a video marketing consulting course all about YouTube. And that's what I ended up selling for $1,000. So that was my first experience, and it was a great experience. And it opened my eyes to what you could actually do online. And I was selling fewer products, but I was selling, you know, obviously higher ticket products.
Did that lead to the $997 video marketing consulting course that included, of course, a membership site, right?
That got them full access to the members area. Exactly. The membership, that YouTube Revealed membership platform that I built with Wishlist and WordPress, essentially.
Well, let me ask you this question. This is a totally fascinating story. Thank you so much for sharing. The statistics that you've read from us show that, or from Gallup, show that for decades they've studied people in their careers, and the statistics are in the around the world are in the 86 percentiles, and in this country in the 70 percentiles of people who haven't faced themselves like you have and started in acting and opera and moved through all different stages of life and aren't doing what they love on a consistent basis. Some people don't have a passion, like your mom. That's all fine.
Right.
They can still have a great life. You can't judge that. But a lot of people, many people want to find their passion and get stuck, as we all get stuck. What would you say to them, Casey, about in what you've learned in your journey? What would you say to listeners about different strategies that they could deploy to move along the path better? Because it's scary. It's scary as the Dickens.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people, you know, when anything is, there are always points in our lives where moments happen where we have to sacrifice. And I think the more we sacrifice, the person that sacrifices the most continues to kind of make those sacrifices. And eventually they are the normal, or the passion in their life or their work isn't even an option. And they've never seen it as such because they've never had the opportunity to see it as such. And so it's not even on the radar.
That's well said.
You know, it's not even, it's like, you're telling me that I can do what I love and make money and do it somehow online. I'm not conceptualizing what you're saying, because what you're telling me is that my life could have changed this many years ago, or my life could change from these moments that I'm sacrificing for my family, for my, you know, any tragedy that may have happened. You know, there are moments in life where unforeseen can take hold of us and put us in a place where we feel like we're stuck in and we have to stay in. And it's because we're making sacrifices. And oftentimes we will have the reasoning behind it and the excuse to say we're making sacrifices. But eventually we might not need to or have the ability to make those, to say that we're making sacrifice. That can't be the excuse at some point. I mean, yes, it can definitely be the reason for doing something now. You know, our families lost our jobs, we have to do this. But eventually that might turn to where that's not necessarily the excuse anymore, mm-hmm. but you're still stuck in that. So with that and the fact that people, baby boomers in particular, I always applaud a baby boomer who steps out of this, yes. because you were held to having, you were told something and you were told a path that would tell you, this is how you succeed. This is the path you need to take in order to succeed. This is your blueprint. And you stick with that blueprint. You become a doctor or a lawyer, or you become a social worker, or, you know, maybe you're a woman and you have to settle for, you know, making what, 8% less or something to that effect, or maybe, God, maybe even more than a man, you know, when you're going through that. And my mother went through those moments, you know, in her life. She went to school, she got 2 masters because she felt like education was what she needed to succeed, to push beyond, obviously, the limitations of what this country was given to women. So she had to work twice as hard, 3 times as hard to get an income that was less than a man. So,
wow, that's courageous.
Yeah, so it's really a fascinating thing that what was told is the path. And you never think, well, you know, I'm going to just follow my passion. I mean, my father he went to law school to avoid the draft, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, was that his passion? Right. Not necessarily.
It was a strategy or a tactic.
It was a strategy.
It was a tactic, actually. Yeah.
It was a tactic at the time that he needed to, had to do in order to avoid something or to at least continue the life that he was going, the path he was going on. He always wanted to be a sports writer, but never became a sports writer. It's like me in acting. I mean, I did acting and I have, and I still love it, but the beauty of what I get to do now, and I was kind of putting this together at one point, why did I become an actor in the first place? I became an actor in the first place, or an entertainer, to, I believe, this is kind of just my working this out of my head, was to evoke an emotion in someone, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something that would evoke an emotional response in you, whether that's me singing a song, you know, or me doing an acting piece, and that would move you. Now, the nice thing that I get to do now is I get to experience that same thing on a different level, because I get to take people through an emotional journey of their lives, I guess you could say, or right. taking them through being able to change their lives, right?
Yes.
There's a little bit of, I get to do that in if I speak at an event or teach a training, you know, I get to get that, I have that response from people, the emotional response, because they take action on maybe learning something that I teach and they change what they're doing at that point. And, you yes. know, when you start getting responses like, Casey, thank you so much. You taught me this and I got 2,000 leads in and, you know, I was able to quit my job. And, you know, it's like Jeez. All those elements, it has that same cathartic feeling for me. It's a selfish feeling, is what pushes me forward to continue to help people, to build tools or strategies that will do the same thing, because that's just my overall goal.
What would you say back to your father at a young age, if you could talk to him as a young man while he went into the law to avoid the draft, which a lot of people did, of course? What would you say to him about keeping that door open as a writer? What would you say?
Well, you know, I think I would say that there are so many zigzags that we tend to take in life, you know, at different points in our life. By that time, my dad had 2 sons and he was married, and he probably felt like he couldn't zig or zag mm-hmm. from what he was doing, because he had to be a provider, just like my mom was a provider, right? But if I could go back to him, I would say, I would tell him that risk taking is okay. I'd probably tell him that there are points in life when we have to do calculated risks based on the outcome of our happiness. And I think that my dad, he put a damper on a lot of his risk-taking after his father died, because his father was an entrepreneur. He owned restaurants and bowling alleys and things like that. But he died at a very young age. And so my dad at a young age was forced to decide what he was going to do with these businesses that were now in his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up just selling all of it because it was just too much for him. And at that time, I think he was looking for something safe.
Okay.
And that's what drove him into being safe because of that. That's a circumstance.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. It totally makes sense too. What would you say, to sum up, have been the greatest benefits, Casey, of you following your instincts, having the courage to face your circumstances and sacrifices and move forward and move through them to a better day, a better idea, a better opportunity? What have been the most palpable benefits? Obviously, financial have been tremendous, but what would you say? What are the rewards to you?
The rewards are that I start trusting my instincts more and I can rely on those. Because before that, you know, knowing that I can actually do something, I'm just taking a stab in the dark. But now I get to create something out of nothing and profit from it oftentimes. It allows me to trust who I am a bit more and allows me to be myself more, where a lot of people tend to not really show themselves. They don't become the best them they can be because of whatever reason, whatever, you know, social norm, or often there's maybe, you know, peer pressure or whatever. I find that I'm coming into my own a bit more, into my own self a bit more, into my own what I want. And being able to finally trust in my own instincts and beliefs, which are still, you know, I don't always trust them. And you always consistently are battling that. But the more you prove it to yourself by achieving success, the more, the easier it gets, I think.
That's right.
To say, okay, well, I'm going to trust these late night, 2 a.m., wake up in the morning and go with it.
Yes.
Instincts, right?
Yes, precisely.
So I feel like that what this has allowed me to do is has allowed me a kind of a, I can take comfort in a new project that I can create succeeding. Whereas somebody else might say to themselves, I mean, I'm putting it all in, all my eggs in one basket. What if this doesn't succeed? I can take more risks because I feel I can trust my calculated instincts.
Perfect. That's a beautiful summary. Well said. Well said indeed. So where are you headed in the next 3 to 5 years? What's your vision going forward, as much as we can have one?
Oh, man. Well, I'm really excited to continue to kind of encourage people to take action in their lives and build the businesses and brands that they want and give them the tools and techniques of doing so. I'm probably not going to veer away much from concepts of video and webinars and live streaming. With some of the new projects that I'm creating, I guess I have a new vision of creating the next Nielsen rating for live stream.
Wow.
That's kind of a passion, a vision that I want to do. And this new product that I've created is sort of kind of one step towards that. And we'll see what that does. But, you know, I think ultimately my biggest thing is to just continue to be here to provide any insight or help in helping other people to kind of build the jobs, the passion projects, the things that they're interested in doing in their lives kind of on a bigger scale.
Yes. So. What are you proudest of in your life to this point? On any aspect of your life, what are you proudest of?
What am I proudest of? That's a really good question. My wife and I don't have kids yet, but we're adopting a couple kids from Haiti.
Ah.
You know, even though this is the weirdest thing to actually say, I'm so excited to be a dad, and I kind of look towards that, and I kind of visualize what that's going to be. And I'm proud of, it's really weird because this really doesn't apply, because it's like I'm looking at the future.
That's all right. That's
I'm proud of a moment in the future where we have these kids and we bring them home and I'm excited about our lives with these kids.
That's wonderful.
I would say that that's one thing. But if I had to be proud of some accomplishments that I've made, is that, you know, there are literally hundreds of people that I've helped. I mean, hundreds. I mean, there might be thousands, but I only have screenshots of probably hundreds of people that have used training or some sort of tool that I've created to change their lives around. And that makes me feel great. I'm very proud of that.
Well, you should be. You're doing amazing work. Casey Zeman, what a great pleasure being with you today. We appreciate you sharing the highlights of your amazing journey. And I know that our listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners get in touch with you?
If anyone wants to find me on Facebook, it's at Casey Zeman. You can also go to Casey Zeman Online, where you can learn more about webinars. You can join our tribe-minded Facebook group, or really do anything else. Find me on Twitter as well as at Casey Zeman. So at Casey Zeman, you'll find me anywhere.
Excellent. And so you have a Facebook group?
We have a couple of Facebook groups. I have a Facebook group called Tribe Minded, where we help people to use these top strategies of video, webinars, top engagement strategies for building a business and brand that they love and always staying tribe-minded, staying more so focused on community instead of business or community as it relates to business, I guess. So the other one, and then we have a couple other ones. One is I have a private one for our Easy Webinar customers, and then another one for our fullscope.tv users as well. That's the analytic and marketing tool for Periscope.
Okay, excellent. Listeners know that you can go to Discover Talent Podcast and to click on podcast, find Casey Zeman. The highlights of this fine interview as well as these links are right there in front of you. You know that we offer an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. Trusting Your Instincts, by the way, is one of those key 12 strategies that Casey described as well as others. It's free. It's a resource. You can get through it rather quickly, and we've had great feedback to it, so please enjoy it. You can also join our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like our content, we would love for you to, and we'd love to have you be a part of our tribe. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.